Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
At home.
Let's be straight. You had your fingers over your eyes for a lot of yesterday against Northwestern, only to remove them and smile. Welcome to Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Little Copeland love there. Pretty emphatic dunk. Nice win for Nebraska basketball. Tim Miles, 70-55. We'll get into that. So much to talk about. Central Florida declaring themselves and the press, some members of the press declaring them national champs. We can spend some time on that. A lot of college football to get to. Brad Edwards in 1 hour, ESPN Insider. College game day, Brad Edwards with us in 1 hour. We'll run down the Pride of Ord, Husker basketball standout Andy Markowski in about 15 minutes. The bad news I got to break to you today, something came up with Shuey, Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey's not going to be in, but we'll run him down sometime soon, in the near future. And we'll have a jock doc. So can tap the line. Schilling Bridge Court can tap house. Let you do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Thoughts on Nebraska basketball. Might sprinkle in some Nebraska recruiting. The Central Florida bonuses we can get into. John Gruden. You'll hear from Chucky on what's next for him. And I need to go take a shower. No brutal visual here. Really, I was going to talk a little bit about Rich Rodriguez, and he was fired last night, and he admitted on social media cheating on his wife. But the claims from the Daily Arizonan with the lawsuit, the alleged lawsuit by this administrative assistant, my Lord. I don't know how much I want to dive into that now, but reading through it, man, the sexual harassment claims by the administrative assistant, just a horrible environment if any smidgen is true. Ugh. So we may get into Rich Rodriguez and how he should have stayed at West Virginia. 466-377-6800-825-5865, numbers to get in. Okay, let's get into Nebraska basketball. Let's dive in. And you know what happened last night? You know how the game started? You may have been on social media. And you as a Nebraska basketball fan, you have been troopers to this program for a long, long time. And your level of commitment may wander and may waver, and I get that. I'm not here to judge that. It's a truth that when they get hot, when they put a good product out there, you're all there to support. You're all there to be there. You're there to pack PBA in the rail yard. But you gotta be entertained. You gotta have something to cheer for. And too many times since the great run by Pettaway and company, this team, this basketball program has stubbed their toe and they've under-delivered with some talent. Well, you might be seeing a shift in that and a wonderful team that could really make some noise. Now, am I overreacting to a Northwestern win? Maybe a little bit. But let's just be flat out honest. This is a game 10 times out of 10 Nebraska usually loses. Am I right? And you've seen examples and instances of this Nebraska basketball team as to why they may and why they are different this year. Still a lot of season left, still Purdue on Saturday. And you have a down Big Ten. But what happened last night with Nebraska not only winning and going blowout mode on Northwestern, but you saw a Nebraska basketball team beat a team. If they don't win last night against Northwestern, is it the end of the world? No, you're 1-2. Is it the end of the world? Instead of 11-5, you're 10-6. There's still ground to make up, but it's one of those games that you don't win that is part of the avalanche as to why you finish and underachieve. And with Nebraska basketball last night, the game against Northwestern, when they're down their best player and you're playing in whatever the hell gym that was, and the sound effects, God love the crowd mics. You still hear it in your sleep, right? The bricks that were shot. That's a game, if you don't win and you lose to Northwestern, it keeps you out of the NCAA tournament. You get no credit, minimal credit, for that win in context without Northwestern's best player and a 10-6 Northwestern team now that's had a wonderful non-conference schedule. Northwestern has, but they haven't beat anybody. But you lose that, it keeps you out of the dance if you're Nebraska, potentially. And you see a 180 here with Nebraska. Four-game win streak. Folks are not running yet, but they know where the bandwagon is located and they're walking towards it. It might be a jog or a sprint if they upset Purdue. We'll talk to Andy Markowski about that. But you had 14 blocks. You gave up 22 offensive rebounds. Northwestern missed 44 shots. You hold them to 29% shooting. But it's a different Nebraska team in a situation where they usually find a way to lose it or have found a way to lose it or didn't execute or pick a reason. Oftentimes with equal or better talent on the floor. And what happens? That equal or better talent showed why they're equal or better talent. With the way they made plays, with the way they finished, with the way they shared the ball. And let's talk about this team's chemistry and the role of the guys. The chemistry for being a group of guys that have kind of just come together and that are mainly transfers, a lot of dudes. You've got guys that aren't going alpha dog, at least openly, right? They all want their shots, but they more importantly have timing. They have a sense of timing. They know when it's their turn or their time. Early in the game, Glenn Watson needed to kind of drive the bus. 11 points for him, kept Nebraska in it. You have a guy like Anton Gill that comes off the bench. He could bitch and moan about doing that. He's not. He came in and hit a big three in that early first part of the first half, and it got Nebraska a lead early, opposed to being down by five. It kind of sparked them. The momentum seizer was when Anton was fouled for that four-point play, and Nebraska goes on a 13-4 run. So Gill made him count, and they were big momentum-swinging shots. So Watson early, Gill with some shots in each part of the half. And then you had Palmer kind of get his guys into drive the ball mode, get to the rim, push the tempo. And then Copeland doing his thing, as you heard the same dunk repeated over and over and over again because it's cool, kind of dominate the paint. And then there's Roby. And after the ball game, Chris Collins kind of equated the lineup that Nebraska finished with to the old Golden State death lineup, where you put Draymond at center. And we've talked with Andy Markowski and Jake Mielheisen about this. Two big, you know, good Nebraska dudes. About what you have with Nebraska and how they finished with Glenn, with Gill, with Palmer, with Cope, with Roby. And this is unseen and unheard of for Nebraska. So it's all working right now. You've won four straight. You're 2-1 in conference. Did you take down Duke? No. But you've beaten Boston College, who's beaten Duke. So it's shaking out and working out okay for Nebraska. And these guys, they went and took some shots, as in the tough one, the inability to finish against Creighton, and the heartbreak against Kansas. They seem to rebound from that, learn from it, grow from it, and go beat Northwestern. Do they play tougher against Purdue? Time will tell. But Nebraska is a different basketball team. They have shown that against some really good opponents this year, and they've shown that against opponents they need to beat. You're going to maybe max out at 6 with the Big Ten this year in the NCAA tournament, and you'll need to be probably a couple, three games over 500, depending on who 5 and 6 are. Let's talk about who sticks out to you in the Big Ten. Sparty, yes. Purdue, yes. Maryland, yes. Penn State's one of those teams that's probably pretty good, but more NIT. Michigan's really good. They won at Iowa for the first time in 100 years. Iowa's down. Wisconsin is down. Minnesota's a ranked team, a tournament team, likely. So you probably have 6. Rutgers is better. I think the air quote ceiling of the Big Ten is probably a little bit better. But I don't know about the middle class of the Big Ten. I don't know how thick, I don't know how good or for real, like Indiana's not back. They're not good this year. They're okay. That looks good on paper, but they're a shadow of what Indiana's supposed to be. Illinois, not anything to write home about. Right now, anyway. So if you're Nebraska, you have to handle your business when you're better than the team and you get a break with McIntosh being out. They did that. We've talked about the roles. We've talked about the lineup. I want to talk about one thing that was just maddening last night if you're a Nebraska fan, and that's the ability to get the ball, get a rebound. That had to drive you absolutely crazy. But you found a way to finish out. Borchardt is your walk-on that's setting screens, that's doing the old Bruce Chubbuck Windex hustle, get on the floor type duty. He is sparked. Jordy has not had a good run. Doobie's an energy guy, but not, you know, if you have Doobie on the floor, a lot of times offensively you're going 4-on-5. He'll hustle and tip it around and try and be, you know, a poor man's Rodman with his athleticism. But when you can finish this out, and when you can get guys to buy in, and when things are clicking and working, bottom line, Nebraska didn't pull a Nebraska basketball last night. And that's find a way to lose a game that's completely winnable and a must-win from a standpoint of situation and context. And you feel good about it. There is rejoicing. Not to the level of, oh my God, they beat Maryland last year. But you're hesitant. Just because you got off to a 3-0 start last year and some really impressive wins. You had a great weekend in February. And then you didn't win a game the rest of the year. That isn't going to happen to this team. I can straight-faced say that because of their talent, their ability, and the problems they cause. And guess what? You've got options to carry the water. Let me ask you this. If you're a Nebraska basketball fan, do you anticipate Glenn having an off night? Yes. He can have an off night in a big game because he's had off nights in non-big games. Miles has gotten on his backside about it too. If Glenn's off, does that mean Gill has to go off? No. That doesn't mean that Palmer or Cope have to go off. Absolutely. Okay. But you have the likelihood of Glenn, Gill, Palmer, Copeland, Roby all having off nights the same night Very unlikely. And not many teams can put those options out there. And if you're a defense, what do you do? Here's Glenn Watson last night, cut two, post-game with BTN. When it comes to setting the tone, Nebraska didn't necessarily do that. Glenn did, the team didn't, but they found a way to finish.
It was big. I mean, Coach told me before the game, he told me, you know, you got to be aggressive. Because the last couple games, you know, I've been slacking and things like that, letting my team down. Even though we played against low competition and we won, he still wanted me to play at a high level at all times and be consistent. So that's what I tried to do tonight and came out on top.
It's going to be the thing with Nebraska basketball from a consistency standpoint. Can they find it? And it all kind of came together in the second half. Palmer had a good second half. Copeland had a big second half. Glenn had 8 points. They need to be able to rebound. And if you're going to play Roby at the five, can he hold up with that sporadically? We'll talk to Andy Markowski about it. Husker standout, Pride of Ord. Andy on an NCAA tournament team. We're less than an hour away from Brad Edwards to talk some college football, some NFL thoughts on John Gruden to Oakland, if that's going to happen, and the mythical national championship awardment and bonuses by UCF. We'll get into it all on a Wednesday with Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone. We welcome in the Pride of Ord, Husker standout Andy Markowski with this. Andy, I'm trying not to overreact to a win against Northwestern, but it looks and feels different for this Nebraska basketball team. Have you pumped your brakes? Or are you, you celebrating last night's win?
Well, certainly, I pumped the brakes a little bit because sure. That is our first road win of the season. You forget.
There's going to be a sound effect of a deflating balloon, but keep going.
But, it certainly the last, 8 minutes of that game looked different than what we've seen, over the course of 10 miles is time. They did not have a scoring drought. They were able to hit some shots that they needed. I felt they, had some sets and some things they did that really bothered Northwestern. And to be honest, Northwestern looked like Nebraska, right? They just couldn't adjust. They went through the scoring drought, really didn't have a go-to guy to get them back on track. So, it was a solid win against an okay Northwestern team. Certainly Nebraska caught a break with the McIntosh injury, but that's part of conference basketball. You're going to catch teams, with injuries through the course of the year, and Nebraska took advantage of that break and finished the game against what I think Northwestern is an NIT team. I don't think they're an NCAA tournament team, but that's still a good win against a quality opponent.
Andy Markowski, a few minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, that's a game that has bit Nebraska many times. Do you agree? And two, the fact that McIntosh was out means you have to win it, right?
Well, if your goal is still an NCAA tournament, which, I felt this was an NCAA caliber team going in. I certainly thought they were going to be on the bubble. I didn't think they were, a five seed. So, yes, I mean, if, they certainly let some games get away from them, the non-conference where you're looking at, probably needing to go 11-7, 10-8 and win a couple games in the tournament. So, the at Northwesterns would be, kind of a mid-tier game in the league, and that's a game that if you want to be a tournament team, you've got to win in order to get to, the 11 wins that you're probably going to need.
Who impressed you most last night for Nebraska? What player?
Well, I still think when Glenn goes, we go. I thought he had a really quiet 19, but I thought he made some really tough plays. There's two key plays. I thought the Gill 4-point play.
Yeah.
Was just a huge play because it's so much easier to play from ahead when you're trying to close out games, especially for a team like Nebraska that hasn't won a lot of close games. When you're up 4 or 5, you know that you can make a mistake, so I think you play confident. If you're down 2 or 3, you're always worried about making that mistake that separates the game. Now you're down five and you beat. So I thought that was a really big shot and a big 4-point play. But going back to Glenn, there's a loose ball on the left sideline that he stuck his nose in, and it probably was a bad call, but he actually got fouled, made two free throws to put us up seven. I thought those two plays were really the difference of the game. I thought Northwestern kind of quit, got selfish late, and we played with a level of confidence, as we're talking trash and cheering from the bench as Palmer drove baseline and dunked. And I just thought those two plays really gave us the confidence to show us we can win that game. And now you hope that carries on, in the games in the future.
I want to talk Palmer for a second and his point totals important, specifically with how the uptick happened in the second half, but more so his choice on how to get there. He'll take some fadeaways, but pushing the ball, getting in transition, gutsy or crazy, going one on three, whatever, it worked. But Nebraska took smart shots last night, or at least shots that had a better shot of going in. Do you agree with that when it came to how they did their business on offense?
Yeah, we're playing with just a better poise and a confidence. This is the first year that Tim has had more, when I say motion, he's always ran a motion, but they have more movement. They're attacking defenses in a different way. So I think that is part of the look you're seeing, Chris, that is, instead of that late contested, shot at the end of the shot clock that this team, has taken for 5 or 6 years, we're getting, more open shots. And I think part of that is Copeland. He really stretches defenses at the four, not only his ability to shoot, but he can put on the floor and drive. He came off a curl cut and made a dunk. That was one of those big plays late in the game. And then you can finish with Roby at your five where you really get good spacing. I don't think they can play that lineup for 30 minutes a game because Roby cannot defend the better back-to-the-basket players in the league. I think he does okay. He's a better help-side defender where he can rotate over and block shots. But when you close a game out with Roby at your five, that's a really difficult lineup to defend. They space the floor well, which allows for the Palmer drives and some of those open shots that they've been getting. And, fortunately this year they're shooting a much better clip from the three. This team has really struggled over the last 2 or 3 years, being a good 3-point percent team.
Well, and you look at the lineup with Glenn, Gill, Palmer, Cope, and Roby that finished things out, and the likelihood of all five of those guys or even four of the five having an off night against a good opponent, that's going to be hard to do. It's not that it can't happen, but this team has so many options, and it's really tough to key on if you're trying to lock them down. What do you think is likely to happen? Do you think Glenn jumps up to a higher altitude now, or do you think you're going to see more from Palmer, Copeland, or even Roby from a points and rebound standpoint? What's a good number for Roby to finish at this year from an average standpoint?
Well, I think Roby is going to be that kid to have 3 or 4 games where he gets, 14, 15, and that might be the difference of you winning a close game. Mm-hmm. I don't think Roby has a role within the offense where he knows where he's getting the majority of his shots. The ball still needs to go through Glenn's hands. Sure. If you look at the last 2 years of when we've beat good teams, meaning tournament teams or good road win, Glenn has 15 to 22 points. I mean, that he is such a key for this team to be able to go and make the plays late. Palmer is a talented scorer. The issue with the lineup you mentioned is they all have some deficiencies. Palmer is not a great defender. He gets careless and loose with the basketball where he has some key turnovers. Gill is an average defender. You need to almost play, Taylor a little bit in that role, mm-hmm. because Gill, can't defend well for large periods of time. But this is the deepest team that Tim has had, and it gives him some versatility. In my opinion, the key position for this team is they've got to get production from the five. I know Borchardt has really played well the last two games. But you can't play Roby, at your five and expect to beat Purdue's and some of these teams that have legit back-to-the-basket players. They've got to get some production from their five If Borchert can be that guy, I would be surprised. But you know, really, the last two games, he's been in and you know been able to solidify that position with not only defending but rebounding, and once they lifted him for some of those on ball screens late in the game, he was in for the key run from the 12-minute mark to basically picked up his fourth foul with about five to go. So they need more consistency from that spot, in addition to all the players that you mentioned. And if they can get that, this is not a hard schedule for Nebraska. I looked at it. You know, you only have Michigan State once. You only have Purdue once. They could win 14 league games. I know that sounds crazy, and you know a lot of things are going to have to go their way. But they are not going to be outmatched in many games on paper, based on the Big Ten being down, and Nebraska is pretty talented.
They are absolutely talented. The pride of Ord Husker standout Andy Markowski with us. Andy, what do you think the timeline is for the patience level from Tim with Jordy? How long do you keep going with him?
Well, you really don't, have a lot of options. You know, KK is a kid that can come in and defend, but he can't shoot. So if you were to lift him like they did late in that game, teams wouldn't guard him and jam the lane. So you really want to get Jordy going. Borchardt, I think, has probably put some pressure on Jordy to have to start playing better. He's losing minutes. You know, Roby certainly gives you some versatility at times through the game, but I still think Jordy is the biggest, most talented, true post Nebraska has. Unfortunate for him, he has not played like it. But you got to stay with him and hope that he can have those three or four games where you really need him out on the court. You know, you have to guard a guy in Haas, against Purdue. Roby's not an answer at the five. I mean, you're going to have to be able to guard him with as much size as you can, and Jordy is that guy in our lineup.
What happens on Saturday? Does Nebraska have a better showing than they did against Michigan State when it comes to that caliber? Michigan State's their own stratosphere, but Purdue's next up. How does Nebraska carry this momentum forward, and what needs to happen for a win?
Yeah, that's a big ask. I mean, I do think Purdue is
sure.
is really good.
It's a big ask.
I don't think they're at the level of Michigan State. And if you look at our last three or four games against Purdue, we actually match up, okay to the style that they play. I think Coach Miles does a nice job against some of their they run a lot of staggered double screens, and I think we're always well prepared in how we defend that stuff. But at Purdue, like you said, just to be competitive would be a great momentum builder for Nebraska. But once you get past that, I think there are a lot of games on the schedule that will be favored in, and that will define, where this team goes. But certainly they could beat Purdue. They're going to have to shoot the three extremely well in order to go, on the road and get that done.
Andy Markowski with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, we'll get caught up again soon. Thanks for the insight. Great to talk some hoops. Appreciate your time.
All right, Schmitty. Thanks.
Take care, bud. There he is, Andy Markowski with us. And so Andy's the most measured dude I know, and he's proud of Nebraska. He loves Nebraska basketball. But he's right with that win total that you might be able to hit in the Big Ten. 12-14 with this talent on paper. And I mean, they beat Purdue a couple of years ago when they had Biggie and Haas. It was in Lincoln. I don't know how the hell that happened, but it was like three-point land. Who knows? These guys, they need a – they've been close enough this year against some tournament teams. Creighton, Kansas. You just beat Northwestern. Again, a total fumble-on-the-goal-line type ball game for Nebraska basketball in years past. They held on to it and they won. They rolled. We'll get into Central Florida, the parade, the bonuses. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Okay, plenty of Nebraska basketball talk the first 40 minutes, thanks to Andy Markowski. Do you believe this is a different Nebraska team And let's get back to some college football. Brad Edwards, 20 minutes away. Rick Hayman, just moments away for you if you're in Lincoln or if you're out west in Grand Island. A reminder about Sauter Hayman, their 0% interest financing continues through 2020. And that'll help you out with the extensive collection of both Earthmind and Pure Grown diamonds. They are beautiful. They are lovely. She will absolutely appreciate them. And 1 carat diamonds available for just $99 down, $99 a month. And you can go visit Rick and your friends at Sauter Hayman today. South Point in Lincoln, 12th and O, downtown in Lincoln or out west in Grand Island, SauterHayman.com. So Central Florida is going all out. Okay, we're talking parade. We're talking they're declaring themselves the national champion. They're doing rings. They're doing banners. They should get some of those rings from Sauter. Just giving you a heads up there, A.D. White, as long as you're handing out bonuses. Now, Scott Frost has hit his ceiling on what he can get. But the assistants, while now at Nebraska, are still going to get their bonuses. That is really cool. I don't know how this whole process worked. I think both ADs, you know, Bill Moos and A.D. White were good with each other. It didn't sound from some of the press conference discussion or even the Jim Rome interview back on the 7th of December with Frost that things had completely been worked out, or if there were some sour grapes or if there's some issues. But from a bonus standpoint, I'd like to see the contract. Not that I have a problem with an unbeaten team getting rewarded for that, getting the bonuses, $200,000. But I'm thinking here, and you heard George come in with the Seinfeld drop. A couple of things. One, it's not a lie if you believe it. Can we just voila, clap our hands, and declare ourselves national champs? As a kid, I saw 100 Nebraska National Champs 1983 sweatshirts because they were printed. You were supposed to lose to Miami. It still hurts. But I had kids in junior high that wore them. They were just there. How do you react to that? Do you care much about it? Is it, oh, that's cute? Or, dude, shake yourself. You went unbeaten. You beat Auburn. Well done. Good luck. Godspeed. Snap out of it. Central Florida knows this ain't going to happen again, so they're going to just let it ride. Look at us. That's fine. But if you step up and say, well, we're the national champs, deal with it. It seems a bit overkill. And reminds me again back to Seinfeld, George, T-Bone, and the nickname.
Well, then we should call you T-Bone.
No, we shouldn't.
T-Bone!
Hey, T-Bone!
No, T-Bone.
No T-Bone?
Hey, is that a T-Bone? Why no T-Bone?
Why no T-Bone?
It's T-Bone. I'm supposed to be T-Bone.
It's the nickname thing, right? Can you give yourself a nickname? Sure you can. But it's a lot cooler if someone else gives you a nickname. You can call yourself a national champion because you went undefeated. But it's a lot cooler if the college football playoff hands you with Larry and the Dr. Pepper gear the trophy. It's just how it works. And don't take any shine by building this attention up. Let the season and your staff and the kids be celebrated. Absolutely be celebrated. And you have been. But don't go overkill with it. If you're the athletic director and make it a joke. Now you're having fun with it. Maybe I'm too get off my lawn guy, and I apologize. It's a goal of mine to be less get off my lawn guy. That's kind of how I feel. It's the old Seinfeld giving yourself a nickname because it's time to change it up. No, someone's got to give you the nickname. No, someone's got to call you a national champion. We haven't even got into this. Talked with Vogues about it yesterday. You know, what would you rank Central Florida? I think they'll end up between 6 and 10. Let me ask you this as a college football fan. We'll get to the phones here in a minute. I don't know. What would you rather see? Central Florida v. Bama? Central Florida v. Georgia? And I know I'm going hypothetical, forgive me. Or what you have, Georgia-Bama. I think everyone's sick of Bama, and I think there's some begrudging respect for Georgia because they've been the team that's never delivered with all sorts of crazy talent. Clemson was kind of fun and cool. OU's OU. They were sexy and fun. But didn't make it happen. What would you rather see? What you got Monday night? I can't change that. I can't poof. Make it disappear. Can't like I can't go poof. Now you're a national champion. But would you have wanted to see Central Florida v. Bama? Because there's some of you that, I might check out my. You got to check out Monday night. Because it's the last time you see college football till the spring game. And it hurts when it goes away. Brian's been on hold. Brian, thanks for calling in to Hail Varsity. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good, man. What do you know?
I would love, absolutely love, and this is based on Alabama fatigue, I would love to see UCF blow them out 62-0.
I think the world would love to see that.
And on a different note, UCF didn't crown themselves national champions. Dan Le Batard did.
Wonderful. That's almost as good, right?
I'm with him.
They're good. Is he wearing a UCF hat now, just like his Miami gear? Did he trade it in?
I'm not really sure. I don't really watch him. I'm always on the road when I hear him.
No, I hear
on the radio.
You.
So
well, good for Dan. Good work by him. Nicely done. Thanks for the phone call, bud. Appreciate you. 466-377-6800 825-5865. They're running with it. They're running with it. People are buying into this championship cause, and it's fun. Would you have wanted to see Central Florida v. Bama? How many times do you see signs, "We want Bama"? Well, Clemson thought they wanted Bama a third time. They got snuffed out Python style. Brad Edwards coming up in 15 minutes. Hope you're well. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Okay, everybody, I have an announcement to make. From now on, I will be known as
Coco the Monkey.
Coco the Monkey. Danny White going on Orlando Radio, propping up Central Florida as national champs. Paul Feinbaum went nuts. I said there's a fine line between having fun with it, keeping the party going, and then becoming a joke. And he's gone from 0 to 60 on finger wagging and disrespect. I don't know. I hate parades. Like, the only cool parade in the history of parades has been the one in Animal House with ramming speed. But I'd go to the Central Florida parade. It's warm. Coming up, we'll run down Brad Edwards. The Honda of Lincoln fan poll. Get in there and vote with HailVarsity.com. Where would you rank UCF in the top 25 at the end of the season? I'm going between 6 and 10, probably 8. We talked with Vogues about it. And do they beat Bama? No. Do they beat Clemson? No. Do they beat Ohio State? No. Do they beat Oklahoma? No. Can they hang? Maybe. Don't know. Do they beat Wisconsin? But we'll never know. And do you want to see Central Florida v. Bama because you think they have a shot, or you just don't want to see an SEC final? And it's the landslide vote would be make it stop. I was one of the few excited for an SEC championship, national champion showdown back in 2011. When I got LSU and that Honey Badger team that had already beaten Bama, and Bama crushed them, killed them. And that was the last you ever heard of LSU living up to the national stage. That was a great LSU team in 2011. Unreal LSU team. Fantastic team. We got time to squeeze in John. John, welcome into Hail Varsity. Happy New Year.
And enlighten me about what you're saying about Central Florida being number one. I think they deserve to be number two, being undefeated. I mean, I think they were 10th coming in here. There's going to be
12th.
12th, okay.
John, do they beat anybody in the final four? And I know they beat the team that beat two of the four. I get that.
Well, I guess my thing is, I think they should be fourth or fifth, at least that, because
so you just went from two to fifth.
I'm agreeing with you there. I'm trying to give you some points there. Okay, I'm saying I think they should be two, but I think they should be fourth or fifth. You know, considering how they won and how they came back.
I think everything surrounding the game and then the game that it was a road game for them, that's the most impressive part of it, along with who they beat. But it's, man, it's just too tough a sell for me to step up to Bama, even though they beat the team that beat Bama.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, 80s action star with ESPN, college football, college game day, ESPN the magazine. Mr. Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, happy 2018, sir. How are you?
Oh, doing great, Chris. How are things there in Lincoln?
Things are well. There's still a lot of smiles happening with Nebraska and Scott Frost and his staff and what happened in the Peach Bowl. And
yep.
We spent a lot of time this last hour between Nebraska basketball getting they got a road win. Okay, so we spent some time talking road win for Nebraska basketball, but also kind of the celebratory nature that Central Florida still partying on with, declaring themselves, some media members declaring them the mythical national champ. I want to start there before we get into some of the bowl games and results, and then for Monday, what's your take, what's your reaction, what's your feel on how Central Florida is handling this this 13-0 season?
Well, look, nobody can keep them from doing what they're doing. They certainly have a right to celebrate and should an undefeated season. It may be a little extreme, but there have been teams that have done similar things in the past. If I remember correctly, Auburn, when they went undefeated in 2004 and didn't get into the BCS championship game, they won the Sugar Bowl and they declared themselves national champions, at least in terms of getting rings for all the players. They have championship rings. Now, of course, you're not going to find anywhere other than maybe the Auburn media guide that would say that they're national champs, and it'll be the same thing with UCF moving forward. But, you know, you go back to past years, I mean, like way back, like World War II era and before, where, you know, there were a lot of different services giving out national championships, and there are a lot of schools that claim national championships for certain seasons that people who were alive at that time don't remember. Even though they were living, they don't remember that team actually winning a national championship, but they claim it, and that would be the same thing. Like, if you know, if we're still here on this planet 50 years from now and UCF's got a banner up in its stadium, then people say, you know what, I don't remember that, but maybe they did. So good for them. I mean, just have fun with it, and it's not hurting anything, that's for sure.
The legend will grow that not only did they take down Auburn, they took down Clemson and Alabama, and, you know, 70 years from now. I wanted to, and this is hypothetical, and I don't like going hypothetical, but you have done a lot of numbers and analytics. How would Central Florida have matched up, in your opinion, against Alabama or Georgia?
Well, obviously the games are not played on paper.
I know.
But I do think that even the Auburn game, yeah, I mean, look, as much as I will give UCF a lot of credit for this, which is that I didn't feel like Auburn was as ready to play that game as UCF was. But when Auburn was down 7 and then scored 2 straight touchdowns to open the second half, at that point, Auburn is emotionally invested in the game. Mm-hmm. And UCF came back and beat them. And so you can't take that away. You can make whatever excuses you want, but the truth is Auburn, they had Auburn's attention, and Auburn had a 7-point lead, and UCF still beat them. So I think the larger issue is what would happen against a team of that caliber if they both came into the game with equal motivation. Would it have taken Auburn a half to get going against what we know is not a very good defense for UCF? Auburn does have a good offense. And so the fact that they, you know, only managed a field goal or whatever it was in the first half, I don't think would happen in a normal situation. And that's what's so hard to replicate. I mean, whenever you're playing these hypotheticals, is, you know, how do you assess the, you know, the result if both teams come out with equal fire? And, you know, so if it's Georgia or Alabama, I think that, I mean, look, I can't sit here and say that either Georgia or Alabama is a lot different than Auburn, because they both lost to Auburn. Of course, Georgia turned around and beat them. They both lost at Jordan-Hare. UCF didn't have to play Auburn at Jordan-Hare. But still, I don't think there's a big difference between, you know, all those teams. And so, yeah, could UCF be competitive with them on a given day? I think so. I think the larger question is, you know, could they hang with them in a game where Alabama or Georgia came in with everything on the line, just like UCF? And of course, the question everybody asks, and this is a big thing with the selection committee, is, you know, looking at the difference between the schedule, would UCF be undefeated if they had to play the SEC schedule? I don't think there's any way they would. I mean, looking at the number of points they allowed to USF and Memphis in back-to-back weeks, would they have won a lot of games? Heck yeah, they would have. Now, I just think it's a completely different animal when you start, you know, trying to project teams. But you know, on a given day, yeah, they could hang with someone. But I think there have been a lot of other Group of Five teams in the past. They could have said the same thing. They could have beaten, you know, a national champion or a playoff team on a given day. They just didn't get that given day.
The big question mark is, can you survive the week in, week out in a Power Five? What's your reaction to Frost's comments after the game about being kept out by the committee? And I thought they were ranked too low at 12. Because I think they're a good football team, and I think their depth and their aggressiveness, and I think the conference they're in, the AAC, is a really good conference. I mean, it's got good teams in it. Maybe not as strong this year as in a couple of years ago, but I think it's really solid. Do you have any gripe with Frost comments? Or do you think Hancock and the committee maybe messed this one up a bit from a from a ranking standpoint. Maybe they don't ever get to four, right? But what about seven? What about eight versus 12?
Yeah, there's no question that they had no shot to get to four even before the season began, just because of their schedule. You know, that their only Power Five opponents were Maryland and Georgia Tech, and you know that wasn't going to give them a chance for a win that was going to impress anybody. You know, the implication that the committee made a conscious effort to keep them out, I guess I can't argue with that, because the committee is making a conscious effort to do everything that it does. Mm-hmm. Their rankings in general are a conscious effort. The question is, like, where should they have been? I'm with you. I think they should have been a couple spots higher. But how much higher? You start looking at it at the end, and it's like, okay, I don't think there's any way you rank them ahead of Ohio State, ahead of Auburn. You kind of start going down the list. USC, I mean, look, maybe in hindsight, after seeing USC get blown out again, maybe you put them ahead of them. But knowing what we did at the time, that seems like a tough call. Penn State, Penn State's another one. I mean, did you really think they were better than them? I think it's difficult to just try to figure out where they should have been if you're going to move them up higher. Who do you put them ahead of? That's the big question. And so it's kind of like with the old thing with the bubble teams in the basketball tournament, where everyone says, oh, this team should have gotten in. Well, and so the question is, if they should have gotten in, who should have been left out?
Who do you take out? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the question: is it who should UCF have been ranked higher than by the selection committee that they were ranked behind? And I'd have to go back and look at it more closely, but I don't think I could come up with a whole lot of teams, because the question they're basically asking when they say who's better, what would happen if these teams played 10 times? It's all hypothetical anyway, but do you think if you think that UCF would beat a team 3 times out of 10, then they're not better than them. Mm-hmm. Just because they're capable of beating them once or twice doesn't make them a better team. And so I think that's where this thing gets tricky. It's not could that team possibly beat the other team. Look, Syracuse beat Clemson, for goodness sake. I mean, so anything's possible on a given day, but how likely is it? That's where you kind of get stuck. And all we have to go off of with UCF is what they did against the schedule they played. They didn't dominate that schedule every week. They did most weeks. But they had an 8-point win against Navy, a Navy team that turned out to be pretty average, not as good as Navy teams in the past. They allowed about 50 points to both USF and Memphis in the final two games. Even though they won both, you see that as a selection committee, and how is that supposed to make you think that they wouldn't give up 70 to Oklahoma? So, I mean, these are just kind of things that the committee has to look at. Now, I hate it that college football, major college football, is the only sport in the world that I'm aware of where you can win every game and not be given a shot to win the championship. Mm-hmm. I wish that was different, but I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Brad Edwards, a few minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how did you process the old Rose Bowl?
That was a fun one.
Nuts.
I would like to take another look at it a few years from now. You know, it's just so easy when it just happened to say, oh, that was the greatest game I've ever seen. But it's up there. I mean, you start putting it up against other games that, you know, had just highest possible implications for both teams. And it's tough to think of very many that you would put on that level. Certainly that Texas USC Rose Bowl after the 2005 season. I would say that Nebraska Miami Orange Bowl after the 83 season that you probably don't talk about very often around there. Although it may come up in conversation.
It's still hard to for some.
Yeah, it is. but you know, there are other games that were exciting but I would say no question it's the best game that we've had in the playoff era. So far, that one's even tough to argue. Even with the Clemson, you know, last second win over Alabama last year in the championship game, it wasn't as good of a game as that one. So it was a great game. And look, I what's crazy is for as many points that were scored, I think both teams left the game thinking, you know what, if we had just called plays a little bit smarter, we would have scored more points than we did, because I think both of them, you could question their play calling at various points that evening.
I think you could absolutely do it, and I think Lincoln Riley's taken some with maybe trying to get too cute or not letting Baker go win it for him, but the other side of that is, okay, that's what they're expecting us to do, so let's switch it up. Brad, a couple of minutes left. What happens on Monday night between Bama and Georgia?
Yeah, there's so many ways you could look at this. I mean, there are two advantages that I think Alabama has. One is just simply that they've been there. This is their third straight year in the national championship game. Georgia's players have not been on this stage. And the other thing is connected to that, which is that there's a turnaround, not just physically, but emotionally. And especially with the type of game Georgia just won. We see this like a lot in the regular season. We talk about this when a team on one Saturday will have just a really taxing, double overtime win in a very big game. And then they've got to come back and play another good team the next week. We always make a big deal out of that and talk about how tough it is to get back up at that level emotionally, and Georgia's going to have to deal with that. That's difficult to do, and I realize, you know, it's the national championship game, but I think the bigger issue is maintaining the level of focus during the week of preparation and not still dwelling on, you know, how great was that Rose Bowl. You know, and so that's a challenge, and that's an advantage for Alabama. I think where Georgia has an edge is that there are two things. Alabama had another injury at linebacker. They lost another starting linebacker who's out for the championship game. They're now down three linebackers after they, you know, were getting healthy leading into the bowl game. They lost one starting linebacker in practice leading up to the Sugar Bowl, lost another one in the Sugar Bowl. So now Alabama's down three linebackers, and that's not good against a team that runs the ball as well as Georgia to be thin at that position. So I think that helps them. The other thing that helps them is that Jalen Hurts is just not a good passer, and that's really all there is to it. And so if Alabama can't run the ball well and stay out of third and long, then Georgia, I think, should have an easy time keeping Alabama under 20 points, as long as they don't turn the ball over. You know, and that's what Clemson did. Clemson turned it over, and they gave Alabama some easy points. If not for that, Alabama might have finished, you know, that game might have ended 10-3.
Yeah.
So I like Georgia's chances because of some of Alabama's limitations, one at quarterback and two because of injuries at linebacker. But the emotional, psychological side of it, I think, is edge to the Crimson Tide.
It is a tough turnaround, and it'll be interesting to see Kirby v. St. Nick. Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at J. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, and ESPN the Magazine. Brad, we'll run you down next week to put a bow on some college football. Thanks again so much for the time today. Always a lot of fun to catch up with you, man.
Well, thank you very much. I'm hoping that people still tune in and watch the game. After they find out that the national champion's already been crowned, they might think that's pointless, and that's going to kill the ESPN ratings, you know. So
yes, absolutely.
So keep it quiet. Don't go telling everybody UCF's the national champ.
I won't. Thank you so
All
much.
Right, thank you.
Take care, Brad. Have a good one, man. That's funny. There you go. No reason to watch. You know who the champ is. Love it. We might get into a little NFL. And the return of Chucky. Does it do anything for you? Always room for college football thoughts. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. As tomorrow we are loaded up. Great stuff from Brad Edwards on college football, on the job Frost did on UCF and this mythical national championship. Good tweet here by Jay Foreman, Black Shirt Jay. This was good. If I'm a coach, I'm going to UCF. And I'm going to UCF. Have to bonuses, fake bonuses, and even bigger when I win. So if it's a fake bonus and you get $200K, What's the new bonus going to be when I win? Interesting. Well thought out. Okay, let's spend a little bit of time on the NFL. And I'm interested to know what you think of John Gruden. Have you watched him on Monday nights? Yeah, probably. Do you get a kick out of him? Yeah, most likely. Do some of you remember him doing his boom in your face, Bill Callahan, on the opposite sideline of the Super Bowl? I do. But if he goes back to the NFL, will it make a difference? And it's going to affect you positively or negatively. Because if you're a football fan, the league's better when Oakland's better. Even if you hate the Raiders, if you're a Chiefs fan or a Donks fan, you like beating them when they're good. You'll always kick them when they're down. But when they're good, it's fun to kind of tee up on them. John Gruden's a guy that, here's what I think happened with him. Let's talk about the evolution of John Gruden getting back on the sideline eventually. How and why did this happen? We'll hear from John Gruden from this morning on ESPN Radio in a minute. He has had this flirtation the last few years. And it's grown. It's a rash, for lack of a better example. Maybe it started on his knees. Now it's covering his whole right leg and up the right side of his arm, that coaching itch, okay? And he went out, didn't go out the way he wanted to go out, blown out in Tampa, made a ton of money, kind of did his thing in TV. The Gruden quarterback camp was always fun. Spider 2Y banana. Lots of fun. But now you have a guy that doesn't want to play the what-if game or the regret game of not getting back in. And it's been amped up with two things. One, he got voted into the Ring of Honor at Tampa. That was extremely emotional for him. That was leading up. And that's the door that hit him in the face that sealed how much he missed it, I believe. Two, there was some unfinished business in Oakland. He built a team. They went to the Super Bowl. He handed it off. It got botched. That botch came here. And then he got one done. Here's the other part of it. I think he's tired of hearing about, well, you won with Tony Dungy's team. And he did. I mean, he won with Tony Dungy's team. But let's give the man some credit. He won with Brad Johnson as quarterback. Okay? I mean, he had Warren Sapp and a killer defense. But he had Brad Johnson as quarterback. So he wants to put to bed the missed opportunity in Oakland. I mean, remember the Tuck rule? You could have ended Tom Brady for you New England haters. At the Tuck rule game, could have knocked out New England. Instead, they're a dynasty. Goes from Oakland to Tampa. Doesn't get credit fully for winning the championship by some. So go take care of business. And by the way, with Oakland, and not Al, but now Mark Davis. I mean, you are being courted as the big splash, big fish attraction on a comparable par with that football team. You need some sizzle and sexiness in Vegas, like you need any more? Well, Gruden's your coach in Vegas here in a couple of years. The NFL loves it and wants it. You pair Gruden with the Raiders, with Vegas, it's a winner. So, it all makes sense. Can he do it in Oakland? Soon to be Vegas. He'll have a quarterback. He'll have Khalil Mack. and he's got to get the offer, and he's got to get the acceptance. Brian's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Brian, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Shmee. Comment on Gruden and also on Frost, UCF. First, Gruden is it'll depend on, I think, his success on two things. One, can he get Carr being back to being Carr, a quarterback? He was not the same quarterback.
He's been, I think Carr, I mean, he had a broken leg, right? He ended last year with a broken leg. And I think that takes a while to come back from, honestly.
I agree, too. It just, let's see if he can be consistent. That's what separates a lot of the top tier. Are they a flash in the pan, or can they consistently year after year play? As far as UCF and Frost, I just want to say what was incredibly refreshing about watching now the Nebraska coach is when Auburn came back and it looked like they took control, the mental toughness of Frost's team just to keep grinding and not get shook.
They didn't panic.
And they didn't panic, and that's the difference between not only Riley's teams who just laid down, but Pelini's teams would totally lose their composure. Frost, even Teal, they just kept grinding. Really impressive.
It's extremely impressive, and that's what excites so many Nebraska fans. And, Brian, thanks for calling, but is the expectation and assumption that you're going to get that mental strength from your football team, which you haven't had in a long time, long, long time. The ability to roll with the punches and bounce back. And the reason Central Florida was able to absorb and be magic is because they trusted the preparation. They had zero doubt. Or if they had some doubt, they were reassured by staff and head coach. And Brad made a money point. As soon as Auburn cranks out 14 in a row, you're now down in their backyard. So you're starting with a deficit and all that momentum wearing War Eagle. And they came back and they won. They made plays. So it was extremely impressive. So John Gruden, I think he loves Carr at quarterback. He's going to have the best quarterback in that division as we speak here and now, because who knows what happens in Kansas City. And a healthy Carr. I mean, the way that leg broke last year, they were 12-4 and then 1-done in the playoffs. And it's going to happen because you don't move on from Del Rio, who they were disappointing this year, but okay last year. They had a first-place schedule this year, too. And why am I spending time on Oakland? Well, the pro Sparky with the Blaze here in Lincoln. Huge Raider fan. We always talk Raiders. And I don't hate the Raiders. But he's the biggest Raider guy I know. You know a Raider fan. Either in your family or in your neighborhood or a buddy you grew up with. So you may have taunted them for years. But there's a bit of grudging respect for them. There is, to me. So Oakland / Vegas will be impressive. So here's Coach Gruden. Are you the next coach, Chucky? Tell us, what are you doing?
Well, that's up to Mark Davis. I have had conversations with Mark, and they're still, I believe, going through the interview process. And when he knows, I think we'll all know. But I appreciate Adam and Chris's confidence that I have a chance of getting that job. It's awful nice, though.
Yeah. Don't know yet. Okay, John, if you're offered, thumbs up or down?
I think there's a good chance. I'm excited about where I am in terms of studying the game and prepared to come back and coach. I just don't want to sit here and speculate. And it's almost like I don't know what's going to happen, Mike. I got to be honest with you. It's been a long couple weeks. I know they've gone through their process of interviewing candidates. Until they're done, I won't know. But I did have a good meeting with Mark. I've known him a long time and got a lot of respect for the Raider football organization.
In your meeting, did you mention his hairstyle? Kidding. It's one way to blow an interview, isn't it? Hey, Mark, your dad was nuts and we called him the Godfather. But what's up with you and the old Dumb and Dumber haircut? What are you doing? Shave it. Comb it over. Slick it back. But don't go bowl cut. Too good for that. Okay, on a serious note, why get back in?
Well, you miss the players. You know, you miss the grind. You miss the journey. Obviously, you miss winning, the opportunity to win. But I just miss being on a team. A lot of times I wake up, I miss being on a team. I do love my Monday night team. That's what's been outstanding. I've had a great opportunity to work with some exceptional people. But the peaks and valleys that go along with the football season are things I think all coaches always miss when they get away from it.
So there's your reasoning. Here's my other reason he didn't mention. You miss that opportunity in Oakland, the team you built. Remember talking to Tim Brown, man. As soon as Callahan was brought in here, we had him on the show 100 years ago. He hated Bill Callahan, but he just, that was John's team. That was for Gruden. We went and tried to win that Super Bowl, even though it was against him. So you didn't get it finished in Oakland, and you don't get the credit by many because you took over Dungy's team in Tampa. Go get one of your own. That's your reasoning. That is absolutely your reasoning. Might have noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year and see folks from AgriGold that have that sign up. Your customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct from their farm the AgriGold way, with high expectations of every seed that goes into the ground. Our approach to soybeans, no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. What's up with Clayton Thorson? Find out with a Jock Doc on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tave is with us to kick off another year and a new year in 2018 with Lincoln Orthopedic. Dr. Doug, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you, Chris. I'm doing great, other than, you know, a little cold here and there.
Yeah, you need the parka, the earmuffs, and the Russian hat. It's brutal out. And did you have a good time watching bowl games?
Man, it was like a marathon, but it was a great time. Enjoyed every bit of it.
No,
I'm just glad I'm not one of the refs on that Music City Bowl game. That's all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's a fair point. You know, I had a chance to watch a lot of bowl games and was interested in Northwestern. And we talk injuries all the time. And in a quarterback, Nebraska fans and Big Ten fans have seen for quite a while is Clayton Thorson, and he's always found a way to get it done. And now he's going to have to bounce back from a really, really tough injury. I know he was carted off. MRI confirmed that Thorson tore his ACL and in that right knee. That was announced earlier in the week. And I wanted your take here on what you see and some of the difference, I guess, with Thorson's ACL when it comes to getting the cart versus some guys who end up tearing their ACL and they're able to kind of go off under their own power or with some different assistance than a cart.
Yeah, that's, you know, we've talked about ACL injuries, you know, numerous times, and you're right. Most of the time what happens is they'll tear their ACL and they'll get up and, you know, they'll get a little assistance, but they're, you know, moving around on the sidelines and not getting taken off in the cart. But the things that can go along with ACL injury are usually the things that I start thinking about when an individual isn't able to bear weight on it, or they're having a lot more pain than what you typically see with an ACL. In that particular case, as I watched the replay, I had some concerns that maybe he had a tibial plateau fracture. So the leg bone having an impaction fracture along with whatever ligament injury was going on. I suspect that that's what the docs there for Northwestern were dealing with, and the trainers just making sure that they didn't see a fracture and getting him off the field safely because of that.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, another Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. We're talking Clayton Thorson, and his injury. Now, looking at some social media and some of the news that came out on Clayton Thorson, surgery is 2 to 3 weeks. He'll have surgery, and he's going to have pre-habilitation. Tell me the process leading up for him and the medical treatment or process before surgery.
Yeah, I like this decision, you know, to have him holding off on surgery here for several weeks. There's a subset of people that have ACL injuries that will end up having a lot of swelling and a lot of difficulty regaining the range of motion in the knee. And those individuals, if you operate on them too quickly, they will sometimes get a permanent limitation in the range of motion of their knee, which is not a great thing, especially for you know, a guy who's looking to come back and play again here next year at Northwestern. So I think this is a good decision to do the rehabilitation going into it, regain the range of motion, get the knee feeling very supple, and then go in and do the ACL reconstruction. It's mostly about controlling the swelling and getting the range of motion back.
When you look at Thorson, and there was a thought that he may head off to the NFL, I don't know how he would have graded out. I know he's steadily improved, and they've won three straight, you know, had three straight 10-win seasons, so that speaks for itself. With him coming back, Northwestern's not announced a timeline or a timetable for Thorson, but based on your experience, what's the future look like for him for spring ball, for fall, and then just being ready for a senior season?
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that he won't be around during spring ball in terms of practicing with the team. He may be, he'll be going through some of his rehab things, but he's not going to be doing a significant degree of practicing during spring ball. When we look at ACL reconstructions, the typical time frame is somewhere between 6 months and a year for return. Most of the time we see that happening in that, you know, 6 to 9 month kind of time frame. So as we look forward to him, you know, in the fall of the year, he certainly has that potential of being available to start either start in the fall of the year or joining, you know, into the fray as the season goes along. But a lot of these things are dependent on the associated injuries that go along with it. Does he have a meniscal tear? Did he injure any of the collateral ligaments along with this? Did he damage any of the gliding surface or articular cartilage? Those things all play into this overall recovery time. And so we'll probably learn a lot more after he has his surgery, and they can give a little bit better prediction as to, you know, what his overall time frame for return would be.
When you look at an ACL, Dr. Doug, is this a type of injury that may force the hand of having to examine a medical redshirt year?
Yeah, it certainly could. It's one of those things, though, that if he doesn't have the other associated injuries, I'm guessing that he won't be in that situation. And there's an awful lot of good players that have come back in that, you know, 6 to 8 month time frame, which he has. I think it would be reasonable to expect to see this guy back.
Talking about Clayton Thorson, his ACL injury, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, when it comes to Thorson's skill set and the mobility he's had, able to move in the pocket, able to do a little quarterback run, and my off the top of my head, we're talking anywhere between 5 and 12 carries a game. Will his mobility be affected, or will that be more of an issue with just getting comfortable with that knee, i.e. the trust we talk about, versus actually slowing him down?
Yeah, I think the likelihood of him being able to get back to scrambling the way that he has and running the way that he has is very high. So we've certainly seen that in a lot of really good running backs over the years. And so I think that potential is certainly there. I think in the quarterback position, though, there is this psychological concern about having your legs hit, you know, as you're in the back, in the pocket, and you kind of have things coming at you from a blind side. Those are things that are difficult sometimes for people to overcome. But this guy's been, you know, he really has a lot of experience. I mean, this is his third full complete mm-hmm. season, if I remember right. And he has a lot of experience. I think he's probably going to be one of the guys that can draw on his experience and get back into this thing fairly quickly.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. And our topic tonight, Clayton Thorson, his ACL, his recovery and prognosis. Dr. Doug, Happy New Year. We'll get caught up again.
You take care, Chris. Stay warm, man.
Good stuff from Dr. Doug and Clayton Thorson. Tough news on that, kind of a freak deal. We will wind down a Wednesday on Hail Varsity Radio. Still room for you. 466-3776. Can tap the line. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. We'll say goodbye next.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Okay, I will let you know tomorrow how Mama's chili is. So, the New Year's resolution at the Schmidt House, Rudolph, is to eat at home more. It just is. She's a fantastic nurse. I do my thing. And then Junior's got 48 practices per week, and good for him, because otherwise he'd be on his stupid computer. But we're going to gather around the table as a family, put our phones down, and eat. That is the edict that has lasted three days at least. So we're doing chili. And I could have helped make it this morning, but she said, no, I got it. And we need, this sounds so vain, right? Someone's making you a pot of chili, shut up and eat it. Absolutely. They're very kind. But there just needs to be more meat in it. It's not vegetarian chili, honey. We don't need a distribution of 3-to-1 bean and sauce with meat. Mix a little sausage into it. A little jalapeno. Maybe some white pepper. How about white chicken chili? But I'm getting some really good
cinnamon rolls? Chili,
well,
and cinnamon rolls?
Well, we'll do that.
There you go.
The problem is when I get home, the cinnamon rolls are going to be raided by her and the kid.
Better drive fast.
Well, you know me. So I will have chili today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, likely. There's three of us. Unless she pulled off asking Uncle Andy over, which would be great. So I'm just going to smile. Yeah, it's awesome tonight, dear. It's wonderful. I mean, you make a lot of your own food, Colton.
I haven't recently, but I've
tried. No, but you'll bring in chicken breast, you'll bring in sweet potatoes, you're cranking up, what are you, Ben Schmidt? Shut up, Colton. But you lift.
Right.
You're in wonderful shape. You're going to be a walk-on. God love you. But do you have a requirement for chili? See, Kranak, I think, won the Yankees King of O Street 1 year for chili.
He's going to bring it in on a Saturday, hopefully.
Yeah. That'd be wonderful. But that's like his chili, and then my mom does pretty good chili. And then I'll have something that's okay. It's chili. It doesn't suck.
Right.
But there needs to be some more thinking of others when it comes to the ingredients.
I think it's got to have enough meat. It has to have sour cream in it, and it has to have cheese in it.
Right, but do you put sour cream on top with the cheese, or do you put it in?
Like, stir it in, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I stir it in. It's a way to do it. If you're going out tonight, make sure you find that sober ride home, because if you get caught drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI. And that could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. and be required to install that interlock device. Think a 40-year-old virgin. It's a no-go. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office, thanks to Colton Stone. Big thanks to our friend Brad Edwards, Andy Markowski, Jeremiah Searles tomorrow.